What does it mean to be rich? Is it having more stories to share or time to give? Is it being able to keep your loved ones close or travel somewhere far away? At Edward Jones, we believe the key to being rich is knowing what counts. Your dedicated financial advisor will take a comprehensive approach to your financial strategy to help support what truly matters to you. EdwardJones.com/findyourrich. Edward Jones, member SIPC.
I'm Frank Holland, and you're listening to CNBC's Worldwide Exchange. Our show is live weekdays at 5 a.m. Eastern. Listen in. It is 5 a.m. here at CNBC Global Headquarters. I'm Frank Holland. I hope you had a great weekend. Here is your 5 at 5. Investors are preparing to kick off a new quarter after markets notched their best start to the year in a half a decade. And the gains, they look set to continue today. Investors are also getting their first chance to react to the latest read on inflation. Did the data, did it just throw another wrench into hopes of Fed rate cuts happening sooner rather than later? AT&T racing to reach out to millions of current and former customers after a massive data breach puts personal information on the dark web. Plus, Nelson Peltz locking in critical support in his fight over Disney's board as the months-long proxy battle moves towards its final act. And we kick off our week-long look at some of the best ideas for Q2 and beyond in the infrastructure and energy plays our next guest is finding opportunity in. It is Monday, April the 1st, 2024, and you are watching Worldwide Exchange right here on CNBC. Good Monday morning. Welcome to Worldwide Exchange. Thank you so much for being with us. Let's get you ready for the trading day ahead. We kick off the hour with a check of U.S. stock futures. Taking a look right now, you see futures are in the green across the board. Looks like the Dow would open up about 120 points higher. The S&P and the Nasdaq both firmly in positive territory. The market's coming off a strong first quarter. The S&P 500 jumping double digits, 10%, notching its best 3 months since all the way back before the pandemic in 2019. The Nasdaq also rising and the Dow also rising 5.5% and 9%. More than 9%, I should say, respectively. You see the charts right here. A busy week on tap for investors with big focus on employment data, including the latest JOLTS report and initial jobless claims before the monthly jobs report. That comes up on Friday. Ahead of all that jobs data and on the back of the latest PCE report, let's take a quick look at the bond market. Yields right now, as you can see on the benchmark, at 4.19%, actually falling a few basis points from the levels that we saw last week following that PCE report. We'll have more on rates and et cetera coming up in just a moment. We also want to get a check on oil. WTI and Brent coming off their second positive quarter in the last three, up 16% and more than 13%. But right now you can see they are fractionally lower right now. WTI trading at about $83 a barrel. Brent just under $87 a barrel. We also want to take a quick check of gold. The precious metal notching its best month in over 3 years in March. And hitting a new record high of $22.25 an ounce on Thursday. Right now, you can see it's actually above that level, up 1.5% higher above that. You see the sharp uptick in gold prices in recent weeks. We'll continue to talk about gold throughout the show. You can see the precious metals up just about 10% for the year. Okay, that's your morning money set up. European markets, they're closed today for the Easter holiday, but the majority of Asia kicking off a new quarter. Our J.P. Ong is live in Singapore with more on that. And J.P., we're here in the U.S. We see the Dow above 40,000. The Nikkei actually falling just below that level.
Good morning to you guys there, Frank. And yes, you're right. Not the best of starts the second quarter for the Nikkei 225, falling below that 40,000 level, as you mentioned. And in stark contrast to how exuberant things were for Japanese stocks in the first quarter. Now, there's still reasons to be optimistic with regards to outline. A number of them on a couple of occasions, from wage growth all the way to corporate earnings and corporate reforms. But this time around the second quarter, you might argue that the focus is on where the Japanese yen is going to head. Now, the yen did soften just a little bit in today's session, but it's coming dangerously close to about 152 against the greenback. And why that's important is because a number of analysts we've talked to over the last couple of weeks have highlighted this level, 152 to about 155, as a possible range where the Bank of Japan and financial authorities actually in Japan might actually be forced to intervene to try and weaken and try to bring back the yen from this excessive weakness. In fact, Finance Minister Shinichi Suzuki once again said that they are ready to act if the yen weakens excessively, which means we might be coming close to the yen perhaps being brought back from this excessive weakness, and thus also means that we could weigh on stocks in Japan for the most part. This is in sharp contrast, of course, to the Chinese market, which opened the day, opened the second quarter in strong fashion based on the strong Caixin PMI gauge. But whether or not Chinese markets continue that tomorrow is yet another question, or it's been a fairly mixed start to the second quarter for Asian markets. Frank, it's back to you, and good morning to you guys in New York.
All right, JP, thank you very much. Our JP Ong live in Singapore. We're turning now to a market flash on Microsoft, where it is reporting the tech giant will sell its chat and its Teams video app separately from its Microsoft Office product globally. The reported moves are coming 6 months after Microsoft separated the two products in Europe in an effort to avoid possible EU antitrust fines. Rivals have argued putting the products together gives Microsoft an unfair advantage. Taking a look at Microsoft shares this morning, up about 0.75%. Again, some news that Microsoft will separate Teams from its Office products globally, possibly off a report in response to EU antitrust regulation. Okay, turning back to the markets, those Chinese PMI numbers, they appear to be giving a lift to global sentiment today. Investors also getting their first chance to react to Friday's PCE data. That's the Fed's favored major measure of inflation, rising 2.5% in February. On the headline number, that's slightly higher than January's figures, but is still in line with expectations. Core prices also rising 2.8%, also matching forecasts. Fed Chair Jay Powell saying on Friday, this latest data is, quote, along the lines of what we would like to see. Markets are now pricing in a 68% chance of a rate cut in June. That's up from 57% at the end of last week. Joining me now is Rianne Mitrione, investment management partner for the Callan Family Office, which has roughly $5 billion in assets under management. Rianne, good morning. Good to see you.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
All right. So we're seeing there PCE kind of came in line. Jay Powell giving some encouraging words. We're seeing the odds of a cut in June rise. So in your mind, as someone who runs a lot of money, do you believe now you just keep working or keep putting money in what's working, or do you switch your strategy at all right now?
I think it's it was nice to see something coming in line with expectations, right? Just like he said, especially after some of the reports that we've had the last couple months, which have caused a little bit of rockiness in the markets as far as it comes, you know, expectations for rate cuts this year. We came into the year with the market pricing in 6, we're down to 3. You know, we had a great start to the year. Everything's been moving up. It's going to depend on what we see over the next couple months. You know, the Fed has been very clear. They're going to be data dependent. I don't think Jay Powell's in a rush to make any moves. They want to see that we continue to trend in the right direction. And so market can do okay. Very well while the Fed is on pause. Still think we're definitely going to see rate cuts happening this year.
Got it. What's been working so far, Rianne, is that mega cap tech trade. We have seen some broadening out in the last month or so, but right now, those are the big gainers of the year. We're talking the names like an NVIDIA. I want to ask you, do you stick with those? Do you take profits? Do you look at some of these broadening out plays like materials and industrials?
Yeah, I mean, we've definitely been taking profits. It's hard to argue with doing that after the run that we've seen over the last year. We have seen that broadening out, and we're happy to see that. And that's, you know, largely that the market is saying, okay, the economy has survived the rate hiking cycle, and everything's, you know, still looking good. So we have been broadening out. We have been reallocating to areas outside of tech. We're keeping a full weighting in tech, just not as overweight as we have. Some of those value and small cap type areas.
I know you're also looking at alternatives, specifically private equity and venture capital. But what about another alternative like gold? Seeing gold hit at record highs, is that something that you would move part of your portfolio to?
That's not typically an area where we do allocate. We do allocate across asset classes, and it is someplace where we do on occasion. We are hitting new highs in gold. We do prefer other areas of the private markets, such as, you know, venture capital, private credit, or very attractive right now. But it is, I mean, gold has had an incredible run here over this, you know, these last several months.
All right, Rianne Mitrione, great to see you. Thank you very much for your time and your insight.
Thanks for having me.
All right, time now for a check on some of this morning's top corporate stories. Our Silvana Hanau is here with those. Silvana, good morning.
Hey, Frank, good Monday morning to you. Well, AT&T revealing it's investigating an incident that led to millions of customers' data being published on the dark web. The company saying it has reset the passcodes of the 7.6 million current users who were impacted and contacting them, along with the more than 65 million former customers who also had their data compromised. AT&T says its preliminary review found that the leaked data was from roughly 2019 or earlier and included information such as social security numbers. Meanwhile, the new president of Nippon Steel saying he's determined to push ahead with his company's $14 billion bid for U.S. Steel. In comments over the weekend, he added that a deal is vital to making the American company more competitive. The remarks come after President Biden had argued that U.S. Steel should be domestically owned and operated. And Disney preparing for its big proxy battle with activist investor Nelson Peltz to come to a conclusion this week. Disney set to hold its annual shareholder meeting on Wednesday. And ahead of that meeting, CalPERS, one of this country's top pension funds with more than 6.5 million Disney shares, revealing it's voted to put Peltz and Jay Rasulo on Disney's board. CalPERS also saying it voted for Iger to be on the board, Frank.
Saga continues, Silvana.
It does.
We'll be talking a lot more about Disney and that whole proxy battle just a bit later in the show. Silvana, thank you. We'll see you later in the show as well. All right, we have a lot more to come here on Worldwide Exchange, including the one word that investors have to know today. But first, our playbook for the second quarter. G-Squared's Victoria Green. She's going to lay out her top pick and the under-the-radar stock that she's bullish on. Plus, oil coming off a third straight month of gains as prices at the pump, they tick higher. What, if any, options the White House might have to combat $4 gas during the busy summer driving season. And later, Shein reportedly seeing its profits pop, just how much the fast fashion brand is pulling in as it looks to go public. We have a very busy hour still ahead when Worldwide Exchange returns. Stay with us.
This episode is brought to you by AARP. 10 years from today, Lisa Schneider will trade in her office job to become the leader of a pack of dogs. As the owner of her own dog rescue, that is. A second act made possible by the reskilling courses Lisa's taking now with AARP to help make sure her income lives as long as she does. And she can finally run with the big dogs. And the small dogs, who just think they're big dogs. That's why the younger you are, the more you need AARP. Learn more at aarp.org/skills.
The market doesn't joke around, so why would you? Get serious. Choose Tastytrade. Tastytrade gives you the tools you need to make smarter moves. Dig into data with advanced charting, track profit accurately with order chain trackers, see risk clearly with curve analysis, and trade with low-capped commissions, stocks, options, futures, and more. All on one platform. No wonder serious traders choose Tastytrade. Join the club, genius. Tastytrade is a registered broker-dealer and member of FINRA and SIPC.
All right, welcome back to Worldwide Exchange. Taking a look at the year-to-date S&P 500 gainers right there at the top of the list. You see two names closely tied to the AI trade. Supermicro, those shares up more than 250% year-to-date, followed by NVIDIA, shares up more than 80% year-to-date. Switching gears a bit, looking at oil prices. They are rising today, adding to recent gains. The move coming on expectations of tighter supply from OPEC's production cuts and ongoing attacks on Russian refineries. Both WTI and Brent crude finishing higher for a third straight month in March. U.S. gas prices, they've also been steadily rising, with RBOB futures up 30% this year. That's translated to about a 14% jump in prices at the pump, with the national average at $3.53 a gallon, a full 2 months before the start of the summer driving season. Let's bring in Halima Croft, Global Head of Commodity Strategy at RBC Capital Markets, also a CNBC contributor, also a friend of the show. Also, just an oil voice that we just lean on so much. Halima, great to see you.
Thank you for having me here,
especially right here in studio.
Frank.
All right, so we got to get into this. You have a new note out today. The thing I want to go back to is those attacks on those Russian refineries. In that new note, you say there's reports at the White House, they tried to stop Ukraine from launching those attacks. You say they're credible. How meaningful to the White House, also to prices at the pump, is that Russian supply?
I mean, this is a huge issue for the White House. The White House is deeply concerned that Ukraine has essentially said, look, if you don't give us the weapons, we're going to defund Russia. And robust revenue from oil has been one of the reasons why Russia has been able to stay in this game. I mean, they have one of the biggest budgets to coming out now, with the defense budget up like 6% of GDP on defense spending. That is driven by robust oil revenue. And so from the standpoint of Ukraine, they're like, we're going to try to defund this machine.
All right. So a possible disruption, does that immediately lead? Is it like a mechanism where that leads to higher prices
so
here
right
in the U.S.?
Right now, they're going after refineries. So they're going after Russia's ability to provide diesel to the front lines, sell refined product overseas. They have not yet hit export terminals, major pipelines. Mm-hmm. That would be a game changer for oil prices. And I think that is what the White House is concerned about. Does Ukraine essentially say everything's on the table when it comes to oil at a time when we have these OPEC cuts in place and U.S. production is not expected to grow like it did last year? So we're looking at a tighter market. Questions about what the White House will do if we're over $4 a gallon in the summer, coming at a difficult moment politically for this White House.
All right. So the thing that's kind of a trigger for consumers, at least, is that $4.
Yes.
You're just already like, yes. $4 a gallon. Right now, again, we're at $3.53. Gas prices are up about 1% year over year. At the same time, diesel prices are down more than 4%. That's kind of deflationary, which on the other side is possibly good for the Biden administration because it's keeping transport costs down. But you're saying summer driver season's coming up.
Summer driving season. That is all important for the White House over the summer. Questions again about what levers do they have to pull. Now, there's going to be a June OPEC meeting. There's a monitoring meeting this week, but there's a big June OPEC meeting. I expect they'll try to put pressure on countries like Saudi Arabia to increase production. If they don't get significant additional supply from Saudi and OPEC, do they have to go back to the SPR?
All right. So the meeting's coming up this week. It's not a full OPEC meeting.
No.
It's kind of like an administrative meeting, right?
It's an administrative, but they can't.
But is it a market mover? I mean, are we going to hear something out of there that possibly might move this
sometimes
oil market that we've already seen moving higher?
Sometimes we get surprises from these monitoring committee meetings. They turn them into full meetings. We don't have any expectations we're going to change policy. So the cuts that they've announced are going to be rolled over till June. So that June meeting becomes very important for the Biden administration. Because, again, if you don't get more OPEC barrels, you have ongoing attacks on Russian economic, you know, energy infrastructure. What happens with the SPR? That's what I would look to.
So nobody has more insight on the Middle East than you. Back to those OPEC barrels. What about Saudi Arabia? You were citing an Andreessen Horowitz research report that Saudi Arabia plans to spend about $40 billion on AI this year. So does that influence their oil policy at all?
I mean, Saudi does have really big spending needs. I mean, they're going to be big in AI. They're building out massive economic infrastructure, NEOM under the Vision 2030 plan. They've had to tap capital markets this year. They've delayed some projects. And so oil is very important for them in terms of delivering on their needs for their citizens, their economic diversification goals. So they will have to balance when the White House goes to them and says, we want more barrels. They have to think about their bottom line revenue as well.
All right. Halima Croft, it is always great to see you. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Have a great day.
Thank you.
All right. Coming up here on Worldwide Exchange, it's not just the markets hitting new records. The one key area getting a big lift thanks to the stock's continued march higher. We'll talk all about it after this break. Stay with us.
This episode is brought to you by AARP. 10 years from today, Lisa Schneider will trade in her office job to become the leader of a pack of dogs. As the owner of her own dog rescue, that is. A second act made possible by the reskilling courses Lisa's taking now with AARP to help make sure her income lives as long as she does. And she can finally run with the big dogs. And the small dogs, who just think they're big dogs. That's why the younger you are, the more you need AARP. Learn more at aarp.org/skills.
All right, welcome back to Worldwide Exchange. Take a look at some of the NASDAQ 100 gainers here today. Right there at the top of the list, you see NVIDIA, followed by Constellation Energy and DoorDash, another chip name Micron, right there in the number four spot. All right, turn our attention again back to the markets. They're coming off a strong start to the year thanks to those first quarter gains. That surge also leading to a major uptick in household wealth. That also climbing to fresh highs. Our Robert Frank joins us with much more on this story. Robert, good morning. Always good to see you.
Good morning, Frank. Always great to see you. And we have record highs in the market and record wealth as a result. Household wealth reaching an all-time high of $156 trillion at the end of 2023. That was thanks mainly to that end-of-year stock rally. Stocks added over $4 trillion in wealth to household net worth in the fourth quarter. Real estate was flat. Private businesses were slightly lower. Pensions and defined benefits also up a little. So those gains, like stocks, are mainly going to those at the top. The wealthiest 10% of Americans own 87% of all individually held stocks. The top 1%
own about half, yet the stock market has helped create the fastest wealth boom for just about everyone in recent history. Since 2020, the wealth of the middle 50% to 90%, so that's really the middle class, has increased by 45%. They've added $14 trillion in wealth, about half of that coming from their home values. Those at the top have done a little better, with the top 1% seeing their wealth increase by 49% since 2020. Most of their gains, however, coming from stocks, with equities adding $8 trillion to the wealth of those at the top. Economists say this wealth effect from stocks, that's where your investment gains increase your consumer confidence and therefore spending, may be one reason this consumer economy continues to remain so strong, Frank.
All right, Robert. I mean, those are some very eye-popping numbers right there. So I got to ask you, are Americans, are they getting more invested in the stock market, especially after this rally?
They are. And that's the other piece of good news. In addition to more wealth, we have more participation in this market. As of 2022, which is the latest number we have, 58% of Americans, that's an all-time record, are owning stocks right now. And more of them are owning individual stocks, not just through their pension funds and 401k. So the good news is stocks are going up, wealth are going up, and more Americans are actually part of it and invested in those gains.
All right, Robert, always great to see you. Our Robert Frank, thank you. All right, coming up, powering the rise of AI, the stocks that could see a big bump from increasing demand around the red hot tech. And if you haven't already, follow our podcast. If you miss Worldwide Exchange, check us out on Apple, Spotify, or other podcast apps. Much more Worldwide Exchange coming up after this. And welcome back to Worldwide Exchange. I'm Frank Collins. Get you ready for the trading day ahead. We pick up the half an hour with the check of U.S. stock futures. As you can see, they are in the green across the board. Looks like the Dow would open up more than 100 points higher. The Nasdaq, however, taking a bit of a dip lower off of its highs of earlier this morning, still firmly in positive territory. All right, we also want to get a check on oil. WTI and Brent coming off their second positive quarter in the last three, up 16% and more than 13% respectively. Take a look right now. You can see they are fractionally lower. WTI, the U.S. benchmark, trading just a penny above 83 bucks a barrel. Brent crude, that's the international benchmark, just below, just a couple cents below $87 a barrel. Again, both fractionally lower right now. We also want to get a check on gold this morning. The precious metal notching its best month in over 3 years in March and hitting a new record high of 2225 an ounce on Thursday. Take a look right now. You can see it's trading about 1.5% higher than that right now. Big uptick in gold prices over the last week. Something that we'll continue to watch here on the show. We also want to talk about what a lot of people call digital gold. That's Bitcoin. On the back of last week's sentencing of Sam Bankman-Fried, right now you can see Bitcoin trading just a couple hundred below 70,000, down about 2%. Remember, Bitcoin trades around the clock. Year to date, though, you can see right here, big run-up for Bitcoin, up more than 63%. Okay, that's your morning money setup. Stocks, so we're going to go to right now, coming off a strong start to the year. The S&P 500 jumping 10% in Q1, its best first 3 months since 2019. The Dow and the NASDAQ rising more than 5.5% and 9% as we kick off the second quarter. We're tapping into some of the brightest market minds to find opportunity, getting their best stock picks for the year and some under the radar plays. Helping us kick things off is Victoria Green, founding partner and chief investment officer at G Square Private Wealth. She is also a CNBC contributor. Vicky, good morning. It is good to see you.
Good morning, Frank. Happy April. April Fool's Day, actually. Uh-oh.
Let's hope you're not here to fool us, Vicky. Let's get into your pick, Quanta Services. It's an infrastructure play for power. Why is this the right pick for right now in Q2?
I see this as a huge demand that only limited companies can fill, and Quanta is uniquely positioned to be able to help with our grid, expanding our power needs, because it's not just, we've been in this period of time where power growth in the U.S. hasn't necessarily happened. We've been kind of the same consumption year over year. With all these data centers and AI coming on board, suddenly power growth and the energy needs of this country are growing. First off, they're 85% in the U.S., very U.S.-focused infrastructure play. Secondly, our grid has been needing updates, regardless of the extra power needs. We've needed to upgrade our grid. So they do things like grid hardening. And what is that? That's like replacing wooden poles with metal and steel, adding concrete, adding more shields, making sure we're better prepared for natural disasters. Secondly, they've got a little bit of a renewable exposure as well as one of their other segments. And that's a continued play we see expanding again here in 2024. Just a really, really well-positioned company. And again, a very unique skill set that is hard for others to come in and a very, very strong moat around their business.
Okay, you're saying it's a strong moat around the business, and it's kind of like a tangential AI play. I do have to point out, stocks have had a big run-up so far year to date. They've doubled the S&P in Q1, up more than 20%. Also, I want to point to something. Their guidance for this year. So their guidance is overall revenue growth of 6.5%, electric power revenue growth, which you're really referencing, of about 8% at the midpoint of the guide. Isn't that a bit muted considering how much you're saying that they're going to see a benefit from AI? In fact, Jeffrey's out with a note over the weekend saying, basically, when's all this AI hype going to turn into revenue reality? Why aren't we seeing more, at least projected growth from them if they're such an AI beneficiary?
I think they gave themselves an easy hurdle to beat, which is always nice. And I think that midpoint guidance by the halfway point in the year may end up getting raised because they do have a huge opportunity set. Their major customers include people like Duke, Energy, PG&E. All of these areas are putting a lot of money. Their backlog is huge in that sector. And so I think it's an easy hurdle for them to potentially beat and raise down the road a little bit. But they're also, remember, a long cycle. You don't just say, hey, I need you to build this power line or fix this power line or install new lines or work on moving things underground. Those tend to be long lead projects, so their backlog is huge. So yes, I do see them growing. Actually, they're projecting free cash flow to grow 25% this year. It's a little bit countercyclical of when they get paid on contracts. Okay. So I think they're very, very well positioned.
All right, so this company actually also technically a REIT. And for a REIT, the dividend's actually very low. The dividend's only 0.14%. Also want to point out, and I know you don't always focus so much on valuation, but it is trading at 31 times forward earnings. Aren't you paying up a lot for a REIT with a very low dividend? And also you're saying they're trying to play it safe. They want to beat their guide, but the growth that they're projecting is pretty muted as well.
It is, and because these have been transforming very quickly, and companies don't always issue guidance on what happened in the last 90 days. Sometimes these are very deep sets. So I look at this and say the power opportunity in the United States has grown tremendously over the last 6 months. So they may be being a little bit slow on, okay, what is a real growth opportunity for us? What are we going to communicate to our shareholders versus what we potentially see as catalysts internally? And I think companies do a very good job of setting that expectation. They may see more catalysts than they're willing to publicly disclose, because once you put that mark out there, if something were to happen, then obviously that's the mark the investors hold you to. So I see this as a very conservative guide. Obviously, the winds of change are moving quickly in the United States, especially for these power needs and grid needs, as well as you have to realize, you know, the Inflation Reduction Act, all of this infrastructure spending. I see them again as a huge net beneficiary, and not one, again, that you have a lot of competition. So no, okay, they're not a dividend play. No, they're not a traditional REIT, but the growth story is very well intact for them.
All right, we got to hit on your dark horse pick as well, Devin Energy. Why is this one the dark horse?
I see them as under the radar. They had a really bad, uncharacteristic 2023. They lagged their peers almost 25%. They've been struggling a little bit with execution, which again is extremely uncharacteristic for this company. I see them returning to form. They have some great exposure direct to WTI. We're seeing WTI rise, you know, from the 70s to mid 80s. At 85 WTI, Devon's got a 13% free cash flow yield. They're planning on giving 70% of their free cash flow back to their shareholders, either through share buybacks or variable dividends. And so the one thing is, number one, I do see their execution improving. Number two, CapEx is supposed to fall about 10% this year. That'll help that free cash flow. Their debt is in really great shape. I mean, they barely have any debt on the books, but they're going to continue to make their balance sheet even better. I look at this as a dark horse of coming off of a bad year. Okay. I think Devon could really benefit.
All right, Vicky Green, your number one pick for Q2, Quantas Services, your dark horse, Devon Energy. Always great to see you. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Frank.
Tomorrow, we're going to have Malcolm Etheridge sharing his Q2 picks as well. But now we're going to get a check on some of this morning's top corporate stories. Silvana Hanau is here with those. Silvana, good to see you again.
Hey, Frank, good to see you. A pair of influential proxy advisors are urging AstraZeneca shareholders to vote against the pay package for CEO Pascal Soriot. The Financial Times reports the plan, which would pay him up to $23.6 million, is being called excessive by Glass Lewis and ISS. Since taking the helm in 2012, Soriot has turned AstraZeneca into the second largest company on the UK's FTSE 100 index, right behind Shell. Meanwhile, Chinese online retailer Shein has seen profits more than double as it seeks approval from Beijing to move ahead with a stock listing in New York or London. Documents seen by the Financial Times show Shein hit a record of more than $2 billion in profits last year and roughly $45 billion in gross merchandise value. Shein was valued at more than $60 billion in a recent funding round. And Cognition Labs, that's an AI startup backed by Peter Thiel, is reportedly in talks with investors to raise new funding at a valuation of up to $2 billion. The Wall Street Journal says, if completed, that would increase the company's valuation to nearly six times what it was just weeks ago. This as the co-founder of Google's AI research division tells the Financial Times, the surge of money flooding into startups and product has resulted in some crypto-like hype. He says that's obscuring the incredible scientific progress in the field, Frank.
All right, Silvana, thank you very much. We're going to stick with AI, NVIDIA, and big tech. They kind of get all the headlines when it comes to tech and data centers, but they rely on the grid and the infrastructure that delivers the power. Our Pippa Stevens joins us with much more on that story. Pippa, good morning.
Good morning, Frank. The bottom line here is a whole lot of power is needed. Data centers' electricity demand could more than double in the next 2 years, according to the IEA, topping 1,000 terawatt hours by 2026. To put that in perspective, it's equivalent to all of Japan's power consumption. And there's a growing consensus that all this new demand won't be met by renewables alone, meaning nat gas demand could also rise, boosting drillers like EQT, Coterra, and Range Resources. But after you get the gas out of the ground, you've also got to move it. And given how hard it is to build a pipeline, especially an interstate one, companies with pipes already in the ground could also have added value. Equitrans, recently bought by EQT, Enbridge, Kinder Morgan, and Williams are key names to watch. Now, one thing data centers absolutely need is reliable 24/7 fuel, meaning infrastructure to ensure uninterrupted power, alongside cooling equipment, temperature and airflow control, and cables. That's where names like Eaton, Wesco, and Atcore come in, as well as Johnson Controls and Trane Technologies for the cooling equipment. RBC called the group a, quote, often overlooked piece of data center operations, noting there's been a meaningful uptick in multi-industry companies mentioning data centers on earnings calls. And Frank, as you just heard from Victoria Green, the data center AI revolution goes well beyond just the big tech and chip names.
Yeah, you know, we also had the CEO of Wesco here on the show. He was kind of talking about the AI and data center story for that company as well. I do want to ask you, though, what is this demand spike for AI and data centers? What does this mean for the grid overall?
Well, it comes at a time when we're already seeing a boost in electrification from things like EVs as well as heat pumps. And for so many years, electricity demand in the U.S. has been flat. But now it is forecast to grow looking forward. And that puts a big strain on the grid that is always monitoring a constant supply and demand scenario. And as things go more distributed from things like rooftop solar, that becomes increasingly difficult. Not to mention there are a lot of bottlenecks when you look at grid build out, including from things like the interconnection queue, all of which means that for some of these data center announcements, it could be almost putting the cart before the horse in terms of the projections and what's actually feasible in terms of building out and readying the grid for this data center, huge demand growth alongside EVs and heat pumps.
All right, our Pippa Stevens live at the NASDAQ. Pippa, thank you very much. All right, taking a quick look at shares of Tesla right now. They're up 1% as its $1,000 price increase on all Model Ys took effect in the U.S. today. Again, shares of Tesla up just about 1%. All right, coming up here on Worldwide Exchange, searching for Bob Iger's successor. The name's apparently at the top of Disney's list as the company prepares to fight for its future with that big board vote this week. We are back on Worldwide Exchange in just a moment. And welcome back to Worldwide Exchange. Taking a look at some of the year-to-date Dow gainers. Right there at the top of the list, you see Disney. Those shares up 36%. We'll be talking more about that company in just a second. Followed by Caterpillar, Merck, American Express, up over 20% year-to-date as well. As I mentioned, we're going to turn to one of the big stories of this week. Disney shareholders, they're set to convene on Wednesday for the company's annual meeting, bringing an end to the months-long proxy fight with activist investor Nelson Peltz and his bid for a board shakeup. Ahead of that vote, CalPERS, one of the country's top pension funds with more than 6.5 million Disney shares, revealing it's voted to put Peltz and Jay Rasulo on Disney's board. CalPERS also saying it voted to put Bob Iger on the board. Iger and Disney's succession plans, a key part of this proxy fight, CNBC's Alex Sherman. He's joining us now. He has a new piece out this morning on CNBC.com looking at one Disney insider who could step up into the CEO role once Bob Iger eventually exits. Alex, good to see you.
Hey, Frank, good to see you.
All right, let's start off with your article. So according to your new story, you say there's a chance that we could see the first female CEO in the 100-year history of Disney. And this person, this woman, according to your article, she's kind of more cut from the same cloth as Bob Iger, has some of those same Hollywood sensibilities.
Yeah, I say it in the story. She's almost like the anti-Bob Chapek, who was the last CEO who lasted about 2 3/4 years. Chapek came up through Disney, spent 30 years at Disney, but was sort of a business guy at heart. He got his MBA. He was sort of in the weeds with how, you know, pricing at the parks might affect attendance. And he had very few Hollywood ties. And in fact, the person he counted on for introductions to the Hollywood community was Dana Walden. And that's who the story is about. Dana Walden has been working at Fox, started working at Fox about 30 years ago and really built that Fox studio into something from nothing. She spent about 25 years at Fox and then came over to Disney in 2019 when Disney acquired the majority of Fox's assets. So she is not a Disney lifer like Bob Chapek. Yeah.
So not a Disney lifer, but she's one of four internal candidates that are being eyed as possible successors for Iger. So, again, Walden's one of them. Another one's Jimmy Pitaro, who runs ESPN. So you just mentioned Walden's not necessarily so businessy. That was kind of Bob Chapek's bag. But Pitaro has a lot of those business sensibilities, has P&L responsibilities and things like that. Give me a sense of the internal candidates, including Pitaro. Who else is kind of seen as the front runner?
So I think it depends on who you ask at Disney, who the front runner is. I think people in the parks division think maybe it's Josh D'Amaro, who runs parks. Other people at Disney think it's very unlikely that Bob Iger would go back to someone who led parks after Bob Chapek, because that didn't work out well. And maybe they'd want more of a creative leader. And that's what led me to write the profile today on Dana Walden. She also has a co-chair of entertainment whose name is Alan Bergman. He's also in the running, I would say. And then you mentioned Jimmy Pitaro, and perhaps Bob Iger would go in that direction if he's looking for someone internally that has a lot of experience already running a big media entity like ESPN is.
All right. So we already covered some of the internal candidates. What about outside candidates, maybe even board members? Are any of those a possibility to succeed Bob Iger?
I mean, now it gets murkier, right? Because, look, it's possible anybody is a candidate. And in fact, if Nelson Peltz gets on the board, I would say that goes to even a larger spectrum, because Peltz is really running on a campaign that I am a headhunter. I know what I'm doing. And the Disney board, you don't know what you're doing when it comes to succession. And the evidence is not only was Chapek sort of a disaster, but Bob Iger has pushed back his retirement 5 different times and there's no clear successor. So that's really his strongest argument for Disney investors to say, you know what, put me on the board and I'll make sure this thing gets done correctly. And we'll look at a bunch of outside candidates, maybe candidates you've never even considered before. The drawback, I would say, is that the Disney culture is thick. And I do think it's hard to bring an outsider in and sort of steer this company in a different direction without irritating a lot of the people that are already there today.
All right, we got to leave the conversation there. Alex Sherman, your new article on CNBC.com. Thank you again for being here. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
All right, turning now to your global briefing, we're going to start with voters dealing with Turkish President Erdogan, giving him a major blow at the polls this weekend. With most of the votes counted, Turkey's opposition party is leading in the mayoral race in Istanbul and picked up 15 other seats in cities nationwide. This marks the worst defeat for Erdogan and his AK party in their more than 2 decades in power, Erdogan calling it a turning point in a post-midnight address. Positive economic data out of China as manufacturing activity expanded at the fastest pace in more than a year in March. A private survey showing business confidence also hitting an 11-month high, driven by growing new orders from domestic and foreign customers. Japan and the European Union plan to start talks on cooperating on advanced materials for next-generation chips and batteries. The Nikkei reports this will reduce their reliance on China for rare metals used in items such as electric vehicles. A framework could be launched as soon as this month. All right, coming up here on Worldwide Exchange, we have the one word that every investor needs to know today. Plus, stocks looking to kick off a new quarter in the green. The moves our next guest is advising to make with your money. Stay with us. All right, welcome back to Worldwide Exchange. It is time now for your WEX wrap-up. We begin with AT&T revealing it's investigating an incident that led to millions of customer data being published on the dark web. The company saying it has reset the passcodes of the 7.6 million current users who were impacted and contacting them along with the more than 65 million former customers who also had their data compromised. Reuters reporting Microsoft will sell its chat and video app Teams business offering separately from its Office product globally. The apparent move is coming 6 months after Microsoft separated the two products in Europe to avoid possible EU antitrust fines. The new president of Nippon Steel saying he's determined to push ahead with his company's $14 billion bid for U.S. steel. He added that a deal is vital to making the American company more competitive. Most fast food workers in California set to begin earning at least $20 an hour starting today. The pay hike in the Golden State making it the highest minimum wage across the U.S. restaurant industry. And the new Godzilla King Kong movie crushing the competition at the box office this holiday weekend, pulling in $80 million in its North American debut, topping the expectations of $50 million. All right, here's what to watch in the trading week ahead. Several pieces of employment data headlined by the monthly jobs report on Friday. On the earnings front, results from Calmann Foods, Dave & Buster's, Levi's, and Conagra. As we were just discussing with Alex Sherman, Disney set to hold its annual shareholding meeting on Wednesday. And later this week, Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen, she travels to China to meet with leaders there. All right, investors are preparing to kick off the new trading week, the month, and the quarter. Take a look at futures right now, as we've been mentioning all morning long. They're in the green across the board. Looks like the Dow would open up more than 100 points higher. The Nasdaq firmly in the green, but off of its highs of earlier. For more on the trading day ahead, let's bring in Jay Hatfield, founder and chief investment officer for InfraCap. Jay, great to have you here in the studio. Good morning.
Thanks, Frank. Thanks for having me in the studio.
All right. So let's start with your news. You raised your S&P price target. Your new price target's 5750, implying about an 8% increase for the broader market. It's pretty bullish. Of the companies that we track, 5500 is the highest. So you're considerably higher than them. What are you seeing? What's going on?
Well, we actually think our target's probably wrong, but too low.
Too low?
Yes. And the reason for it really is what most people don't appreciate. Well, first of all, it's really the year of global rate cuts. And you can see that in the futures market. The average OECD country has 100 basis points of cuts built into that. And what a lot of people don't understand is that to lower rates, central banks have to inject liquidity. And that's really what we saw in 2020 and 21. That's really what drives stocks and bond markets.
So you just gave us your WEXWAR of the day. Your WEXWAR of the day today is liquidity. And part of your argument is that this year, 2024, we're going to see $2 trillion, that's trillion with a T, of liquidity in the global money supply. What impact does that have on the markets? Is that one of the catalysts for you raising the S&P price target?
That's really the critical catalyst.
Yeah.
So we got bullish on the stock market in early 2020. Because of that huge injection. The global monetary base went up 32% during 2020. So that's really what drives stock and bond markets. That's what drove the market lower. In 22, the global money supply dropped by 6%. So investors should really track that. You can get that on our website. We're the only ones who add it all together for you.
All right. I want to get to some of your picks. You actually have some picks when it comes to the financial sector, but I do want to bounce something off you. Goldman out with a note today saying that revenues for big U.S. banks are going to be down 2%. Also going to see some margin pressure. So why is right now? Why is the time to invest in big U.S. banks?
Well, actually, we would avoid regional banks and banks that have big exposure to net interest margin. So we're really focused on the investment banks that benefit from underwriting and the bull market that we're expecting. We've already seen that. We saw the Reddit IPO. So we would avoid any banks with net interest margin or significant net interest margin. We're focusing more on the pure investment banks like Morgan Stanley, Goldman Sachs are our biggest holdings in ICAP, or in the small cap fund, SCAP, we have Jefferies. So we think they'll beat the other banks. And we do agree with Goldman that normal banking business will be under pressure because of rate cuts.
All right. So your two picks are based on the investment bank situation. You feel kind of encouraged by the Reddit IPO. I would imagine Astera Labs also pretty encouraging.
Right.
Are there other IPOs that you see coming down the pike that will be successful? They're going to give a boost to those businesses?
We do. Well, if we are correct about a summer power rally, then you're going to have a heat up in the calendar. There's a lot big backlog. And you'll even have some of the startups that are just now starting come public later this year and next year. Mm-hmm. So, but not only that, there's already a boom in fixed income underwriting and a slight pickup in M&A as well.
All right, before we let you go, we've got to talk about one other area outside of equities. Gold hitting a record high on Thursday. Looks like it's going to continue to reach new highs today. What's your view on gold and the investability right now?
Well, gold usually does well when the dollar's weak and the bond market's rallying. But right now, there's a lot of demand out of China. I think a little bit of a safe haven in China. They restrict cryptocurrency trading. So we would be bullish, though, because we're forecasting the U.S. 10-year goes down below 350. So that would be bullish for gold.
I got to leave it there. Jay Hatfield, good to see you. Your new S&P price target, 5750. We're going to do a quick check of futures before we let you go. As you mentioned, they've been in the green across the board. Going to start off right now looking at the Dow. Looks like the Dow would open up about 100 points higher, at least at this point. We're going to leave it there. You've been listening to CNBC's Worldwide Exchange. You can always catch us live weekdays at 5 a.m. Eastern.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.